The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Reno and Stevie Nichol. A little later on in the programme, Archer in Tuck will be joining us to give us all the reaction in Germany from Bayern's 3-2 controversial victory over Borussia Dortmund. We kick things off, though, in the Premier League that saw Ralf Rangnick's first game in charge of Manchester United end in a 1-0 victory, thanks to a brilliant goal from Fred, proving to be the difference between the two sides. What that means, we can take a look at the table. Manchester United move up now. They are 3 points adrift of West Ham in fourth. United currently sixth in the table. To reflect on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Frank Leboeuf and Don Hutchinson to the show. Don, what changes did you witness?
I witnessed something different in terms of their style. In the end, he reverted back to 4-4-2 and he made some brave calls, I thought, Rangnick. Not many would have took Bruno Fernandes, Jadon Sancho and Marcus Rashford all off in the same game. So he shows that he's got a bit of power and a bit of authority. Alex Telles played well. Dalot played well as wing-backs, as full-backs, sorry. So I thought it was one of them games where I couldn't read too much into it. You're not going to see a transformation in style or pressing or anything ridiculously different. You should have definitely scored. That would have tested Man United if they had went one behind with about 15 minutes to go. But if you're a manager and it's your first home game against Palace and you've got some easy fixtures coming up, just win the game.
Stevie?
A clear change in the way they were trying to play. You know, we were so used to seeing so many teams today passing the ball sideways, and particularly Fred and McTominay. I mean, you talk about experts of passing the ball sideways. Right. The way they were set up at the start of this game was the ball could only go forward. Now, I'm going to assume that it was so obvious that eventually Rangnick will calm this down a little bit, because too many times they were going forward when it wasn't really on and they were losing the ball. Yes, there was a lot of energy and they were all pressing and they were all running around, and it sort of got, if you're a United fan, you're excited. But there didn't seem to be enough control in it.
Right.
But we certainly sat here last week and said, he needs to make a statement, he needs to make a change. And no question he made a change. They're going the right way now. They're going forward. That's what Manchester United used to do, especially under Fergie. It was all about going forward and putting the opposition under pressure. That's what we saw in this game, in patches.
You agree, Frank?
I do agree. I think what was interesting, especially the first half, is the contra-pressing that they made as soon as they lost the ball. That was a big change where they tried under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but it was a kind of a disorder, kind of contra-pressing that. I found it very interesting the way they played the first half. I found even interesting to see Lindelof very accurate the first half, because maybe of that contra-pressing, feeling a bit more free. And I enjoyed the first half. The second half, in the other hand, I saw Manchester United back to their defaults, where they don't know where they stand, they don't know where to go, they open spaces to the others. And we just saw the action from IU, who should have scored. And it would have been a different ending, maybe, if he would had. So they just trying to transfer some ideas to others. They're healing from the past, so it's difficult to judge them. But they won.
This whole 4-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2 for life.
That doesn't sound like a.
Well, it's pretty much that's the way it looked on the field. Like, it's a little odd to see a player like Jadon Sancho in a more central position. And when by design you don't give width to the team, and the width is going to be provided from Dalot on the right hand side and whoever is playing on the left hand side, in this case Tejes, I know this is the way he wants to play, but the moment that other teams figure out, okay, hold on a second, wait a minute, you're saying to me that you're not going to use that width with your natural wide players and you're going to pull those guys to the middle, the first thing that I'm going to do is, if I'm an opposing manager, is I'm going to try to get these guys from the middle to come and have to play out in wider areas, because I'm gonna create mismatches in wider areas, and I'm going to say, okay, Fred, come out here to the wide area. McTominay, come out here to the wide area. And once they get wide, then what happens in the middle? The middle is wide open. Now, I understand that this is what you want to do offensively, but the moment a team figures out how to break through that first line of pressure against Manchester United and they are broken through the midfield, they're going to have issues with transition. Today was exciting because, hey, now all of a sudden we're pressing and we're going forward. And it's exciting to see Manchester United playing in the attacking half. There's another element to this. If they don't press together and they don't press well enough, they get broken through the midfield, they get exposed in wide areas, they're going to be in trouble.
They've got a good run in games coming up.
Yeah, they've got a great run, haven't they?
This is the perfect time for any new manager in Manchester United to try and change some things and maybe get away with it. Mm. You know, Brentford struggling, Newcastle, Brighton. So these are good games for Ranić to try and implement some stuff. And as you saw today, changing it towards the end, because just clearly, I think they've run out of steam.
Right.
And Ronaldo isn't going to be able to do this week in and week out. No chance.
Well, Ranić very complimentary about Ronaldo, Don, especially his off-the-ball work.
Yeah, but I mean, like, a new manager's not going to come in and pick a fight with Ronaldo, one of the biggest egos in the dressing room. He's sensible, Ranić. It's pointless picking a fight when Ronaldo's going to be there for the next 18 months. I agree with the lads. I think watching the game, and I'm not going to be too doom and gloom on Ranić's first game, but it would have been very interesting to see if they had to come against a Man City or a Liverpool. They might have destroyed Man United today. So Stevie's right in terms of the games that they've coming up. It can try things, it can try different formations, it can give players lots of freedom, it can try and work in the training ground. This is all on the back of Ranić only having one day's training with his team. So at the same time, I'm trying to cut him a little bit of slack, but I think he's an intelligent guy, Dan. I think he knows what he's doing. Why would you go in at Man United and pick a fight with Ronaldo? I just think early on, you get everyone on board, you get a clean sheet, you get Ronaldo eventually in 2 or 3 weeks' time with the next run of games scoring goals. Everything will be fine, but we need to judge them on a longer period when they play some big sides to see how much they've moved on.
Meanwhile, back-to-back wins for Antonio Conte and his new Spurs side, beating Norwich City by 3-0. Sanchez, Son, and it was Lucas Moura who opened the scoring. In this one, Stevie, comfortable win for Spurs.
In the end, Pukki had a chance. They would have made it 1-0 to Norwich. That might have changed things, but listen, when you've got a front line with Lucas Moura, Kane and Heung-Min Song, there's going to be times where they're going to get it together and they're going to be a handful. So it is Norwich. It is another win in a row, which is what it's all about.
Yeah.
But I just worry about Tottenham. What goes on behind that front three I talked about is not very good.
Let's take a look at how that the bookies have things set regarding who's going to finish in the top four. I think everyone will agree it's Chelsea, City and Liverpool. And there is one place remaining as to who will be going in the Champions League next season. According to the bookies, Manchester United are the favourites, well ahead, in fact, of West Ham and then Spurs. Arsenal coming in 4-1. They're, of course, in action on Monday. Frank, who would be your pick now? Manchester United that much favourites in your eyes?
No, not at all. I think West Ham showed big strength, you know, against the big teams, because yeah. I think they beat the three at front of them, and they showed character and talent against Chelsea during the weekend. So right now, no, Manchester United is healing from the Solskjaer era. Tottenham is also trying to get something out of Conte, so we'll see. But West Ham, they're doing great. I mean, they do great. They're strong with the strongs. They're weak with the weaks, I would say. But they do the job. But by the way, no penalty for me, by the way, but it's another subject. But I think they do well. I think they do well. They compete. Yeah, because where is the tackle? Oh, you want to talk about it? Really? We can talk about it. Show me the action, exactly the same action, and I'll show you that Mendy doesn't touch Bowen. But Bowen falls. But whatever. But West Ham for me, sorry. Good cross, by the way. That one is a good cross.
Dom, who's fourth?
Do you know what? Even though West Ham are doing terrific and David Moyes has beat Klopp, he's beat Tuchel, he's beat Guardiola all this season, they took another two bad injuries in that game. So Ogbonna's gone down with an ACL. He's going to be missing for the season. Zuma done his hamstring. And Ben Johnson done his hamstring as well. So the only way, in my opinion, West Ham can get fourth, if there's some serious investment in January. I'm not so sure David Moyes is going to get an awful lot of money to spend, but that squad needs strengthening. I would actually lean towards Man United, and I know they're going through a sort of transition, but them games they've got coming up, Dan, like you said before, there's 8 or 9, 10 games where the West Ham will be the toughest team they play. They should actually win every single one of them.
Wow.
That's going to put them in a really good position in, what, 2 or 3 months' time.
United, Stevie?
No.
Oh.
Well, what have United done this season? Just name me one thing they've done better than West Ham.
They've got a new boss in.
In all kinds of departments.
They've got new boss
in. Not as good defensively. They're not strong in the middle of the park.
But what about the pressing?
They've got Michael Antonio, who's been fantastic going forward. They're a unit. How have they done against the top teams? Well, guess what? They've beaten Chelsea and they've beaten Liverpool. We've been sat here for the whole season so far saying that the Chelsea, Liverpool and City are way ahead of everybody else.
Yep.
They've completely and utter demolished Manchester United by 5-4. But then you're going to go against West Ham, who are... I understand what Don's saying about the injuries, but West Ham are a team. West Ham's a unit. And West Ham doesn't have the pressure every time they step on the field that Manchester United has. So I'm going for West Ham.
Don't listen to Dunn, because let me tell you what just happened here with Dunn. Former West Ham player. This was the old double bluff.
Right.
This is a double bluff. It's like, no, I just don't see West Ham. How is this going to happen? Oh, no. Oh, poor us, West Ham. West Ham. I'm going to pick West Ham.
West Ham?
Yes, sir.
Frank, as you're on, you mentioned, obviously, the Chelsea game. What's going on with them at the moment?
Well, you know, lately, not convinced about what I see. Well, you can say that you have players injured, because that's the truth. Chilwell, Lukaku just came back. We just seeing Ziyech coming back to his best, but that wasn't the case. Some others are missing. N'Golo Kante, Kovacic. I think they're big elements in the middle of the park. So I guess Mendy is maybe in a doubt. I would say right now, you know, and Tuchel said that he has a kind of a lack of a confidence right now. I think the football that they play is interesting, but it's not convincing to me in a way that I don't feel the strength that I used to see like a month ago. And that's the thing that, remember, last year, before Frank Lampard was sacked, in November, they were... first, I think, or second maybe. And people were saying, you know, Chelsea may be a contender. And then something happened in the December time. And they lost against Arsenal December 26th. And they were nowhere near it around there before Tuchel came back. So I don't know if that's the repeat, you say, it's going to be repeated. Mm. But let's see. But I'm not happy with what I see. It's interesting. But how can you lose and after you lead 2-1, concede two stupid goals like that? Whatever. That's what I see.
More Chelsea talk on Extra Time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. Frank and Don are back for that. Ali and Stevie, of course, are with us as well to answer your tweets. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jude Bellingham certainly wasn't pulling any punches, was he, after Borussia Dortmund's defeat against Bayern Munich? When it came to the officials, he said, for me, it wasn't a penalty. Hummels isn't even looking at the ball. He's fighting to get it, and it just sort of hits him. It hits him, and I don't even think he's looking at the ball. You can look at a lot of the decisions in the game. You give a referee that has match fixed before the biggest game in Germany, what do you expect?
Wow.
We're talking about Felix Zweier, who, of course, back in 2005 was suspended for 6 months after being involved in a match-fixing scandal in Bundesliga 2. Since then, though, he's refereed many games in the Bundesliga, was VAR as well, back in the World Cup. As we welcome Archie Rintutt, 24 hours on, Archie. What's the reaction in Germany been to Jude Bellingham's comments?
It's just been tagged on the end of what was a mad game, given all of the incident, whether you want to look at the fact that there was a fake bus driven into the Signal Iduna Park yesterday with somebody pretending to be Marco Rosa from a prank show. If you want to look at René Maric, the assistant coach of Borussia Dortmund, deadlifting Marco Rosa to try and stop himself getting sent off. Rafael Guerrero celebrating before Erling Haaland's goal's gone in. The pigeons on the pitch. I don't know where to start. But given what happened... Oh, and the crowd chanting Messi, Messi at Robert Lewandowski. That was quite funny as well. But with this decision, there is a lot of uproar that Jude Bellingham has said the things that a lot of fans have been thinking before. But I think it's just a natural thing that when a decision goes against your side, you're going to look and pick up on that kind of detail from a referee when he has been convicted of past misdemeanors. And the fact is that piece of information only came out a few years ago as part of a newspaper investigation. I think that it's really a bad look for the German FA and the authority that Felix Zweier has on a pitch when Jude Bellingham, who was, I believe, 1 year old at the time that I committed this offence, I think that he's recently come into this information. And it says something about how it's being talked about in Bundesliga dressing rooms. And if you're a referee, you need authority. And this severely dents that of Felix Zweier, even if he has done 750-odd Bundesliga games. So it presents a big problem for the Bundesliga. And can you see Felix Zweier being given a game like this again in the Bundesliga? I doubt it, given the fallout from this.
Boys, obviously you weren't here yesterday. Let's talk about the decision. Felix Zweier missed it on the pitch, but it's not entirely his fault, is he? In the sense that surely that's why VAR is there, his team is there, for telling him to go and have another look, which obviously they did for the second incident, which we'll talk about in a moment. But this first incident, Stevie, for you, was it a penalty?
Yes, it was a penalty. And we can only guess, but I'm going to try and put myself in the referee's shoes and considering it's in the box, and considering everybody other than the referee probably sees it better, then I'm going to ask VAR, what do you think?
Right.
You know, I mean, the referee doesn't take any time at all and points to a goal kick. So is he really that sure that he's seen it properly? No. Clearly, he hasn't seen it properly. So the fact that he's so bullish in the decision he makes, one, not talking to VAR, and two, VAR not talking to him,
yeah,
they get it completely wrong every single which way you look at it.
Is that pushing, Ali?
I think,
Go on, Archie.
I think, so Felix Zweier came out and did an interview after the game yesterday, and he was saying that he believed at the time that it was just a question of upper body being put in by Lucas Hernandez, didn't feel it was worth looking at again, and was told by his VAR team, and that was confirmed. The problem is, it's the way that the way that he refereed the whole game as a whole. And when you are allowing 50-50 challenges like that, and then you're not going to look at that on the VAR screen, and then you immediately go and do that for the decision, which I think is a lot more debatable, which happened with Mats Hummels. That is what has caused such outrage from Borussia Dortmund point of view.
For me, it wasn't a 50-50 challenge, by the way. Lucas Hernandez is in the wrong position defensively. He knows he's in the wrong position, and so therefore he's now trying to recover, and in his attempt to recover, he fouls the player. I think it's a penalty. Now, the issue then becomes, and this is the wiggle room, this is the thing that drives TV crazy, is it a clear and obvious mistake from the referee? So I'll spin it the other way. If this had been called a penalty, is this a clear and obvious error for it to be called back? And I think the answer is no, either way. Now, for me, it's a penalty. It felt like a penalty when I saw it at first. It felt like a penalty when I saw it on the replay. Still feels like a penalty now, but the referee didn't see it as such. And then we get into that whole interpretation and that whole discussion about VAR. Is it clear and obvious? And that's where they hide. That is a very comfortable place to hide, because then you can just say, well, I just don't think it's clear and obvious. We move on with the rest of our lives.
What I thought was interesting from Jude Bellingham is that he made more of a fuss about the second one, obviously off the back of the fact they didn't check the monitor the first one. But Archie, that's a penalty.
The first one for Dortmund, it is.
And then the Hummels handball is a penalty.
No. But it's important to point out that the German FA has said today that they wouldn't have given that penalty because Haaland was offside in the build-up for it.
Well, why on earth did they not just say that yesterday? Why would you not just come out and say that yesterday? Why is it taking you 24 hours to come out and say that Haaland was offside in the blooming decision? You say that yesterday and that completely, utterly changes the dynamic of these discussions. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. So, but from a Dortmund point of view, it was the fact is that they didn't go and look at that decision. And even if he'd gone over to the monitor that he has, then that diffuses things a lot more. But Dortmund feel that they're not getting the same treatment as Bayern. And I think that that is what has annoyed them so much.
But the Hummels one, there must be acceptance within even the Borussia Dortmund support that that is a penalty, Archie.
I think it's difficult because he's off balance and he's blindsided. He's got Thomas Müller pushing against his head. Like, you can talk about an unnatural position, but he's falling over. He's not.
So what?
He's not in an unnatural position by choice.
Archie, if he falls over on the goal line and does that, is that a penalty?
But it's not on the goal line, is it, Stevie?
But inside the penalty box. Nobody fouls him. If he's fallen over, it's his own fault. Nobody's pushed him. But he's fallen over. And if his hands away from his
challenge
body,
with Thomas
it's
Muller.
A penalty. It's a penalty kick.
Nah.
Right. Are you telling me it's a foul on Thomas Muller? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not. I'm saying that right, so it's a
you're
tussle
not saying that,
between the two of them.
Then you're wrong.
It's a tussle between the two of them.
No, it's
them,
not.
And he's coming out of it.
I'll ask
you
again. You
can see him there. Like, he's not.
I'll ask
you. He's trying to come through Jude Bellingham.
I don't
there.
Want to hear a story, Archie. I'll ask you a clear question.
You don't?
Is it a foul on Thomas Muller?
No. It's
right,
play
well,
on.
It's a penalty.
That's
end
happened.
Of story. You can't. It's not a foul.
It's play on. And what's more, is that a clear and obvious error?
What?
Was that a clear and obvious error? He didn't see it the first time. He has to be told about that. And then, when you slow everything down, of course there's more intent. That's the thing with VAR. It's the whole application of it that makes no sense.
Yeah, Archie, the question that I would have for you, and you're entitled to see it whichever way you want to see it, but who challenges for a header like this? Who does that? Who challenges for a ball that is flying? No, but who challenges for a ball that is flying into the 18-yard box like this? Who does that? With a chicken wing sticking out.
Situation.
Who does that?
He's not. If Jude Bellingham's not there, then of course he's not doing that. Then he's able to get a natural position. But he can't because Bellingham's in front of him.
What is he doing?
And that's why he challenges like that.
Is he hiding
he's
with his
Bellingham
cane?
To
is
one
his
side and he's got
what
Müller to the other.
So?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any difference, Archie.
It's his responsibility to control his body.
Correct.
Archie. Okay. He's got to be able to control his body. And when he gets out of control and then he puts his arm out there like that, you have no option but to call a penalty.
Unless somebody fouls him.
And did somebody foul him, Stevie?
That would be a no.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're going in circles here. Just finally, just to tie a bow on this, Archie, is Bellingham going to face suspension?
He will, in all likelihood, face a fine from the German FA. Suspension, we're not sure about yet.
Title race over.
Is that to me? I think it's not looking good. You needed Dortmund to win that. Tom Amunier was saying to us yesterday on FC that he thinks that there's still life in this yet. The problem is Dortmund haven't been playing with enough defensive stability anyway. And look, you could say, did they lose it because of the penalty decision? I think they had the wind taken out of their sails for the Julian Brandt injury yesterday as well. And also just the amount of individual defensive mistakes that they continue to make. Bayern aren't looking great right now, by any means. These last few performances haven't been good. It's difficult to bet against them, though.
You would suggest, meanwhile, Borussia Dortmund are in a much better possession than, say, someone like Leipzig at the moment. Not even in the top 10, sitting 11th. Jesse Marsch has parted company with his club as of today. This is the statement they put out. Leipzig and head coach Jesse Marsch have mutually agreed to part ways. The decision is the result of an in-depth analysis and intensive discussions after the Bundesliga match against Union Berlin, which, of course, they lost. Archie, it's a bit of a surprise, isn't it? Not necessarily the decision now, but the fact that he struggled so much this season.
When you think about what RB wanted, and that is they wanted this return to, as they called it, classic RB football, which was high pressing, intensity, up the other end of the pitch. That didn't represent a continuation of what had been happening under Julian Nagelsmann. They'd evolved their style of play. They were playing more possession-based football mixed in with that kind of pressing. And the problem is Jesse Marsch was brought in along those lines, and the squad that he had grown used to playing this Nagelsmann way of playing. So what happened was Marsch tried to implement that old style. The players looked confused. He then went back to trying to play more of the way that they had done under Julian Nagelsmann. That had some success. And then he got continually caught in confusion, I think. And the players didn't know what they had to do in the end. And I think that, sure, it doesn't reflect well on Jesse Marsch, but the biggest, I think, victim of all of this, victim's probably the wrong word, the biggest culprit in all of this is the Leipzig CEO Oliver Mintzlaff, whose decision it was to bring in Marsch because it just didn't fit what was needed for the situation. So I feel sorry for Jesse Marsch, especially being sacked when you're in coronavirus isolation at home. That's not a particularly nice scenario for anyone to be in. But I think that ultimately he wasn't the right guy for the job because of what was needed stylistically.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Back-to-back wins for Juventus in the league as they beat Genoa by 2-0. Cuadrado scoring from the corner and Dybala late on to give them all 3 points. We don't say this very often for Juventus this season, Don. Very easy for Allegri's side.
Yeah, look at the XG, 3. I mean, it could have been a lot more than that, Dan. It could have been 7. I mean, they were incredible. I know people will say it's against Genoa and Shevchenko's team who have not scored a goal, who are sitting in the bottom three, but 27 attempts. None attempts from Genoa. They could have scored 6 or 7 easily. They were so good. Cuadrado scored from a corner direct. Dybala scored late on. Sirigu, the Genoa goalkeeper, had the game of his life because, as I said, it could have been any sort of number. And that's 4 wins from 5. I mean, before the game started, there were 14 points behind Milan, 10 points off Atalanta in fourth. So it was one of them games where the atmosphere was electric. They had to get the win. And then all of a sudden, with that win, takes them, joint fifth.
Right.
Alongside Fiorentina. And all of a sudden, it doesn't seem like a million miles away from fourth.
Are they starting to find that groove then, Donny? Is he starting to find his best 11?
Sort of, Dan. I mean, it's hard to try and get a handle on them because better sides will give them tougher games and probably beat Juve. They're not the finished article. And quite interestingly, Morata was on a yellow card and he showed a bit of fight during the game. And Max Allegri took him off because he was on a yellow card. And the two of them had a really big spat and a big fight on the touchline. And then he brought Moise Kean on, who then got a yellow card. So it was quite a feisty game. But when you look at that team there, apart from Dybala and apart from Morata, there's no goals in that midfield area. You know, from the likes of Locatelli and Bernardeschi, really, really good players. They don't score. They're like, every single midfield player's numbers are like 1 in 16, 1 in 17. So you ain't going to win a title if you're not scoring any goals and you're too reliant on the front men. But I think they can go on a run. The next three fixtures are favourable. Mm. They've got too much distance to get anywhere near Milan.
Don, thank you very much. Of course, it was all about Saturday when it came to the teams at the top of the table. Be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, reflecting on that extraordinary comeback win for Atalanta as they beat Napoli.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
That is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned though. Don and Frank are back, as are Ali and Stevie as well.
It's English here for your cup, isn't it? They'd be in England.
Well, yeah, I know. But some Welsh teams playing it as well,
really,
don't they?
Donut.
Right, stay tuned. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. You're drumming away, Ali.
Huh?
I'm drumming away on the table.
Excited.
Stevie's here as well. Don and Frank. Frank, you were saying you're going on a 98, France 98 reunion?
Oh, hello.
Yes, we try to do it every year, but because of the COVID, we didn't do the two past years. And we're going to celebrate Aimé Jacquet. He just celebrated his 80th birthday, 80 years of birthday. So he's our God, he's our, the guy who made us, being champion of the world. So we have to celebrate him. And we're so happy that he's going to be with us tomorrow evening. So I don't know how many we're going to be. I don't know if Zidane's going to be there, if I can ask if he's going to go to the Premier League once, I don't know.
Well, that's a bit old now. United signed
there,
a new coach,
I'm ask him.
Frank. That's done now. And who do you
know? Well, but you never know. for next year, maybe, you never know, for July or June.
Now, there's a lot of like Christmas parties coming up, things like that. And we know when it comes to dinner, Frank, there's people you want to avoid being sat next to, Craig Burley. So who would you out of that French squad avoid?
Avoid?
Yeah.
I don't want to avoid anybody. Why do you want me to avoid anybody? No, I'm very close to Vicente Lizarazu.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have a lunch tomorrow, and we have a he works for TV for radio, so I'm gonna be his guest. So I'm very close to Manu Petit as well, and also Christophe Dugarry, because we worked together. Otherwise, no, I like everybody. But I don't think Laurent Blanc will be there.
No.
Because he's in Qatar. I don't think, who else? Some other, Thierry Henry, I don't think. We didn't see Thierry Henry, Tavi Trezeguet a lot, you know.
They Why
don't
not?
Come quite often. I don't know. You should ask them, you know. I don't have the answer for that.
And who picks it's up sad. The bill, Frank?
It's sad. It's a kind of a club that we created, and you know we gave like 8 million euros to charities.
Wow. Diverse
charities. Yeah, playing games. Now we're too old, so we still have a little bit of money. So that's the club who's gonna pay. That's France 98 who's gonna pay. that's okay. We still have some money. I think we can have like
107.5 million left.
Dinner, so if you want.
That's quite a kitty. Blooming egg.
Similar to our budget.
Don, will you have reunions with your former teammates like during this time?
No.
Not invited.
And we certainly haven't got 8 million. No, we haven't got 8 million neither.
Oh, there you go. Well,
at least we know who Thierry Henry and the other ones that don't tell not won't sit with.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They do not like Frank, do they?
Nope.
I didn't know Henry hated Frank.
I wonder if Frank is going to hand out, when everybody's entering the restaurant, if he's going to hand out his book.
Yes, you're going to give everyone a copy of your book, Frank. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. No, but Lilian Thuram did when this book went out. You know, he gave a book to each of us. But I don't know. I'm not that kind of person. I know that Lizarazu wants one, so I'm going to give it to him very happily. I'm going to give it to him. But otherwise, no. I think they don't care. I don't think they don't need that kind of books, you know, to find their way to success, you know.
Right, let's get on with some questions away from Frank's reunion. Ali, what do you think Barca would have to do to beat Bayern?
Slow the game down, and I mean really slow the game down. Do not allow Bayern Munich to get off and run into spaces, but in order to do that, you have to be very clean with your possession. And Barcelona has proven, even with Xavi, that even though their possession has improved somewhat, slightly, they still turn the ball over in bad areas, and that's when Bayern Munich just goes in transition, and Barcelona has zero chance to keep up with that.
Stevie, is your boy Lukaku? Did you see, by the way, they published all the Ballon d'Or votes?
Lukaku?
And which country voted for who?
No, I didn't see it.
The Scottish journalist had Romelu Lukaku second. Lewandowski fifth.
Oh.
just say it. That's your boy.
Who first?
Listen, I'm not surprised one iota.
Why?
I used to stand on Hampden Park with a ball at my feet, and all I could hear from the stand was, get up the park, Scotland! Get up the park! I mean, if you started passing that around, they would complain.
Right.
We beat that great Colombia team. We beat them 1-0 at Hampden Park.
Right.
We got completely outplayed, and we were one up, and we were trying to slow the game down and knock the ball around at the back, try to kill it off. And the punters are all screaming, get it up the park! So what surprise is it when a Scottish journalist goes for Lukaku over Lewandowski? Seriously.
Lukaku?
Honestly, I've got to tell you, we played England, the under-21s, semi-final of European Championships.
Right.
We played them at Hampden Park and we got beat 1-0, right? And it was the same. It was get it up the park. Stop messing about at the back with us the ball. Get it up the back. Anyway, I was on the way home. I go into this chip shop on the way.
Of course.
Around the corner for Arden Park.
Post-game meal.
And I'm standing listening to this guy talking to the guy that owns the chip shop, waiting on his fish and chips.
Right.
Oh, we just don't. We can't pass the ball. We don't know how to do it. We never pass the ball. All we do is kick it long. And I'm standing, I'm going, are you having a laugh? You were probably the one that was standing behind me shouting, get it up the park. they didn't give us a chance to do it.
40 years ago, Stephen, it's still there.
The good thing is that you've turned the page on it.
Yeah.
Don, is Lukaku a good fit for this Tuchel Chelsea team?
Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll be absolutely fine. I mean, he's got to get himself up to speed, but just because he's been injured and he hasn't scored in like a couple of games, everyone's jumping on the back of him all of a sudden. He's like top scorer in Serie A last season. He'll be absolutely fine.
The Masuaku shot was clearly a shot, and he deserves credit for that.
That's not a Scottish journalist, is it?
What? Craig said he meant it yesterday.
Craig
said the way that he struck it,
When did you listen to what Bolly said?
I'm just saying.
What a lot of nonsense.
It hit his toe.
Are you not buying it?
No.
No?
Ain't nothing mean it.
No, Don?
No chance.
No, it hit his toe. Like, if you're trying to whip it in from that angle, Dan, and you hit with your instep, you're going to get a little bit of whip. You hit one with a golf club and it catches the toe, it's exactly what happened. No chance did he mean that.
So, Don, have you had any goals that people didn't think you meant, but in fact you did? Well, halfway line one, obviously. Yes,
absolutely.
No, I can't claim that. To the flip side of that question, Stevie would have played in the game, pretty sure, for Liverpool on my home debut at Anfield against Sheffield Wednesday. And cross or a corner got whipped in from the right-hand side, got headed to the edge of the 18-yard box. And I went for pure technique, Dan. I went for Baratti would go for, Busquets would go for,
right.
Frank would go for, the technique like that. And I drilled it straight into the floor. Bounce 50 yards up in the air, straight over Chris Woods in the back of the net.
Yes.
1-1.
On your debut, Don.
Home debut. It was the worst strike ever.
Beautiful.
But you'll take it.
I guess you don't remember that, Stevie.
No.
Well.
With Gladbach giving
the chip
up
shop.
6 goals to Freiburg in the first half, what were the most amount of goals the ESPN FC crew gave up in a first half game they played in? Not many at Liverpool, I imagine, Stevie.
No. Sheffield Wednesday. It was live on a Monday night.
Right.
Now, what happened was, I wasn't expecting to even be at the game. I thought I was going to be out, not even in the squad.
Okay.
And so, we trained Sunday morning, and it turns out I was actually in the squad. I was in the 18.
Mm.
Good communication.
So, back then we didn't travel to the morning, to the following day.
Yeah.
So, day of the game. And I'm sat in the house Sunday lunchtime. I'm going, there's no way.
Why did you think you weren't going to be in the squad?
Well, because I wasn't. I was out of the team by then.
Okay.
I was in the last year of my deal. I was 37.
Yeah.
38, maybe nearly.
It's the last lap.
So I was in my last hurrah.
Yes.
And I thought, there's no way. No way I'm even going to be on the bench. I'm certainly not playing. So I went to my local.
Right. This is a public house.
Had a few libations.
Right.
Good decision.
Yes.
Probably double figures.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
Great. Yes. Even better decision.
Got to the game.
Yeah.
I'm sat on the bench, and after 20 minutes, it's 3-0.
Right. Not to Sheffield Wednesday.
Not to Sheffield Wednesday.
Right.
And the next minute, David Plate goes, David, going to warm up. I was like, oh. You got to be kidding me. Anyway, that went on. Getting at half time, 5-0.
Wow.
We actually lost the game 7-2. So we actually drew the second half 2-2.
Oh, that's a nice positive spin.
And actually, I was all right. I actually did all right in the game as well.
Oh, there you go.
I couldn't believe it. I was sat in my chair after the game. I'm thinking, how did I do that?
Wow.
How did I get through that?
Well, you did lose 7-2.
Yes. Oh. You didn't quite get through that.
Well.
All that well.
Well, for 10 pints.
Okay, context.
Don?
I was involved in a 7-0 at Old Trafford in a cup game.
Ooh.
I was on the bench at the time, and Glenn Roeder decided at 7-0 down to put me on.
You went and hid. This is what your hiding story, isn't it, Don?
Yes, exactly. So I come out the dugout towards the Stretford end. I chucked a right and I thought there's no way I'm having any part of this 7-0. It's got nothing to do with me whatsoever. I'm not having my fingerprints on that 7-0. So as I went down to the Stretford end, in the main stand, there was a couple of seats that were empty. And I thought, I'll go and sit in there for the next 15 minutes. And I got one of the Man United fans just to budge up a little bit. And I sat in there just so Glenn Roeder couldn't see me warming up. And then he just forgot. And I just thought, there's no way. What am I going to do at 7-0 down?
How has Glenn Roeder forgotten that you're in the squad?
Well, I mean...
Because he's probably like looking down the right side and he's probably got so much to worry about on the game and he might have forgot... He might have knew that he sent me out for a warm-up, but there was like three or four lads warming up. He might have seen one of the French boys or he might have seen John Moncur, whoever was warming up with me. And seven's going in. It might have been eight, might have been nine. And I'm looking at the clock thinking he's forgot.
Wow.
He's forgot. And I just sat there and I thought, I want nothing to do with this whatsoever.
What a team player Don was.
Wow.
Tell you,
huh? Yeah, exactly.
What a professional.
Frankie. Frank?
I lost 8-0 against Lille. The last game of the season, we were already relegated with Laval. Half of the team were already on their departure to other clubs. And I was staying. It was my first year for Laval. And I played that game, and I think it was 5-0 half-time. And when they scored the 6-1 second half, I decided to smash their best players, which was Abedi Pelé, the Ayew father.
Wow.
You know, the Ayew played for Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And I smashed him, and I got red-carded, and we lost 8-0.
Good, lots of good team players here. That's all. Alejandro?
We were playing World Cup qualifiers against Brazil in Venezuela. Stadium's packed.
Right.
The emotion, national anthem.
Yes.
We're knocking the ball around. We're creating chances. Oh, my goodness, are we going to beat Brazil? And then Kaká at that time was flying. Man, he went on a run. 1-0. 2-0. 3-0. 4-0. It's like, but what happened? We were doing so well. Now, that whole stadium that was so excited to see us play, first half, every time Brazil touched the ball, they were ole-ing us.
Beautiful.
The stadium in Venezuela was clapping for Brazil and ole-ing us. And of course, when we came off the field, booing us. It was a great feeling.
I bet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was wonderful.
Don, what are the percentage chances that any of your predictions come true?
Oh, like what? I said West Ham would end up in the top four, didn't I?
That's the easiest percentage of the rest of them.
I think it's a zero, isn't it?
I've not been a million miles out on my calls, have I?
Didn't you say Chelsea had a 0% chance of winning the Champions League last season?
Oh,
I think that one defined you.
West Ham last year.
Yeah, West Ham 2 years ago.
2 years
ago.
Top four.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, Stevie, come on. Stevie, they're in the top four for like 6 months of the season.
Yeah. What about Harry Kane to City? Done deal. 100%
yes,
happening.
Sources.
Yeah.
Sources. People behind the scenes.
Everyone keeps pulling me up on that one. You guys know that deal was done. It's almost like you didn't want the deal to happen just so you could rib me.
Well,
that deal was done.
Well, clearly
everyone
not.
Knows it.
Clearly not done.
It was done.
He'd be there.
It was.
Heung-min Son did a Spider-Man celebration after meeting Spurs fans. Tom Holland this week. It's a good question. Who was the coolest celebrity you got to meet because they were a fan of your club?
Oh boy.
Wow. Did you meet some Beatles? Paul McCartney?
How old did you get up?
Well, 60.
When were the Beatles? 19. They were actually.
Well, they're still alive. Paul McCartney's still alive.
They actually got defunct in the 60s.
Right. But they could still go to a match, couldn't they? Paul McCartney could still go to a game.
They're all living abroad by then.
Right.
You went very Scottish there with your abroad. Abroad.
Nobody would know. Like,
okay.
Stan Boardman. Jimmy Tarbuck.
Right, these are comedians.
Aye. Like,
back in the day.
Real scousers.
Yeah.
That people wouldn't know today.
Did you meet the Queen? Anyone like that?
No. Met Muhammad Ali.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Tarbuck and Muhammad Ali.
There you go.
Wow.
Jimmy Tarbuck and Muhammad Ali.
Some of them met Nelson Mandela. But I'll tell you what, neither of the two of them told us any jokes.
Right.
Oh, that's not like Stan and...
Yeah, not like your Liverpool comedians.
Jimmy Tarbrush.
Right. Frank, I imagine you've met some celebrities during your days.
Yes, at Chelsea we had some, but the most famous one I think was Sir Richard Baron, Richard Attenborough, the director and actor. I think everybody knows him. I think he played that.
I think we sensible,
the Lost. how do you say the movie? The movie, the
Jurassic Park,
the dinosaurs and everything.
Jurassic Park.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the owner of the Jurassic Park. Yeah.
There you go. Did he take his Jurassic Park?
It was absolutely. No. But he was absolutely fantastic. A fantastic guy. You know, after the games, every game he was coming to see us, and that was one of the biggest celebrity I ever seen at Chelsea.
Oh well, there you go, Don.
Like Stevie, Nelson Mandela in South Africa, but Ray Winston, big West Ham fan.
Right.
Who, if you've seen the movie Departed, that's in my top three of all time. Brilliant, brilliant actor and a massive, massive West Ham fan.
Oh, there you go, Ali. Obviously, Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, yes, who was a big Philadelphia Union fan. Well, this is not a name or personality that people would really know, but there were, when you play with the Venezuelan national team, sometimes you get to meet Miss Universe, who came from Venezuela.
Ooh. Oh. Ooh.
It's much better than meeting Hugh Jackman. That's what I'm going to say. Just saying.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Final question. Frank, is there anything Americans or other people do with French food that irritates you?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. First, you know, criticizing snail where you don't know what it is when you
snail.
Taste it. So
snail.
It's sad.
I'm not eating.
No, but I wouldn't eat snail without the dressing. Of course, it's disgusting, but with the dressing, it's absolutely fantastic. But whatever. No, nothing much. I think people try to do their best. I remember being on the on holidays with my wife on the I think it was in our Nevada state around the how do you say
Grand Canyon?
Whatever. It was a hotel. Grand Canyon, thank you very much. And there was somebody who came very proudly to explain to me what was all the French pastries that they had.
Oh.
And it was very funny because none of them were French. So whatever, but it was very funny.
I just thought about that. I met the president.
And we didn't say anything.
Yeah, you met President Bush and President Obama.
President Bush, President Obama. Those are celebrities, right?
Yeah, I know.
Counts.
Miss Universe is still.
She's at a different level. Better. Different level.
Don, you're not a fan of snails?
No, I mean, as soon as Frank mentioned snail, I'm thinking I'm not eating them.
Have you tried them? They're really nice,
snail.
Don.
I don't care. I'm not eating a snail. Stevie's not eating a snail.
Well, yes, but Stevie's Stevie.
I can't eat a snail.
No. You'll have an oyster, though, Don.
French frog.
Love an oyster.
And frogs.
Yeah.
See, a raw oyster, there's a texture.
Oyster and snails.
Why would you want to eat a... Frank, why would you want to eat a snail and a frog?
Dan.
Seriously.
Dan, tell us your experience, Dan. With what you tasted last summer with me.
It was delicious, Frank. Frank bought me snails, taught me how to eat them properly. It was lovely.
So do you chew it?
Very
Surely there's better things to eat.
Of course you chew it.
Surely there's better things to eat than a snail and a frog.
When I see people eating snails and oysters and all that, they just go like that, chuck it down and go, whoa.
Well, that's
so it's like, what's the point of that?
Oysters are lovely as well, Stevie.
So why do people chuck it down quickly before they bulk it back up?
Because they don't know how to eat it.
Exactly.
Oh, that is it. We are. It's Stevie's birthday next weekend. I think a snails and oyster special.
Absolutely.
That'd be beautiful.
Oh. Oysters would be great.
Get the frog.
Thank you very much, Scott. Enjoy your dinner, Frank.
Hey.
Whoa, sounds good, doesn't it?
Thank you.
Yeah. We will be back tomorrow for more. Be sure to join us then.